What are you doing up at this hour of the night?
What are you doing up at this hour of the night?
Prevention of crime. Every hour of the day and night.
Movie.
Break.
Is the team that protects your property and you.
Hallo liebe Movie Break Hörer und Hörerinnen, hier sind wir wieder mit einem neuen Interview und vielleicht hört ihr das so im Hintergrund, es gibt ja den Movie Break Thekencast. Also das hier ist nicht der Thekencast, aber ich sitze hier tatsächlich an einer Theke, um einen Regisseur zu interviewen des wunderbaren isländischen Films Beautiful Beings, der am 11. November startet. Also wenn ihr diese Podcast hört, dann hat er wahrscheinlich schon seinen Kinostart bekommen. Und ich sitze hier mit Gudmundur Arna Gudmundsen. Hi.
Hi.
So great to be here with you and your movie. I could already see it at Berlinale. It's the Oscar contender for Iceland.
Yeah.
If we in Germany think of Iceland, we think of beautiful landscapes and ecological efficiency and a very well-to-do society. And we see nothing of that in your movie, which has a very dark and socially conscious subject about three young people and their that integrate a fourth person into their group of friends. How did you come up with that subject?
Well, it's inspired by my teenagehood in Iceland, in the suburbs. And it's just another side of Iceland that isn't maybe promoted for tourists. But, you know, it's a layer in our society that's there, and like in all other societies, you know.
What was very fascinating for me is that we see in the first half of your movie a person from the underclass in the focus of attention, a young boy from a very broken family who's bullied and then meets a couple of new people who ultimately become very close friends to him. And it's very rare that we see underclass characters, no matter if they're kids or adults, on screen. Was that also an issue, and why do you think that is, that we see those characters so rarely?
I don't know if we see them rarely, because I think it depends on what films we watch. Basically.
Yeah. And how did you come up with the class dynamic? Because some of the boys that are in the center of the action are from more middle class families, some are working class, and some are underclass.
Yeah,
and it's actually very rare in real life that we have those inter-class interactions. Usually the classes stick more to themselves. How did you come up with that? How did you explore those themes?
Well, in Scandinavia, that's more the usual for us. And especially in Iceland, because there we don't have our school system is based on neighborhoods, and every neighborhood is built with upper, middle, and working class kind of combined together. And that's so all kids go to a school where they have all the classes kind of combined. So that's the norm. You know, and so it's more when I see British, like some other films from other societies, when you kind of see this clear upper class, we don't really have that so much in Iceland.
And you said that this movie is also inspired by your own views. Would you like to elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, I mean, when I was growing up in Iceland, there was a lot of youth violence among boys. And I was in a friend group where this kind of behavior was very much promoted, and kind of like a toxic masculinity environment. And I used to pull in new boys into that group, mostly boys that had maybe no friends or were the kind of the opposite, to kind of create a little balance within the group. And so the film is kind of inspired from those years, but it's still a fictional story, you know. And I think it's important that people know it's fiction, because my old friends, it wouldn't be fair for them if people think that everything is in the film actually happened.
And within that dynamic of the film, you said it's fiction, and while we have this very social realist elements, we also have fantastical elements like dreams that become true. And it's maybe interesting to know, while the international title is Beautiful Beings, the original Icelandic title actually translates to Nightmare, if I'm correct.
No, that's the wrong translation.
So what is the right translation?
It's Bertrimi. It's more like an omen, or like, but omen sounds very big, but Bertrimi sounds just like a normal thing, that you dream something that then happens. And in Iceland, that is a part of our culture, is, you know, that we dream, talk about our dreams and believe that, you know, there are some supernatural elements in the world. And I mean, not everyone in Iceland believe in that, but a big portion of Icelanders can connect to that. So for me, that's also based on reality within my world.
That's very fascinating, because we not only do we not have an equivalent word in German for a dream that does come true. There's no word to describe that. It just doesn't exist. Dreams don't come true.
Okay, that's very strange.
It's also that it explains why it's in such a natural way intertwined in the action. And do you think it also is the only way to deal with those very harsh subjects that come up in the movie, such as child abuse and violence, that we kind of retreat into this fantasy world where we hope that there is some magical solution where there actually is no solution?
No, I mean, the film is, I mean, for me, that fantasy side of the film, it was important that that was just a side story, because I wanted to portray that in the most natural way I knew. And for me, that's also just part of reality in a way. So it was more about like finding the right balance between showing the beauty of the friendship the boy have and then the violence to kind of so, you know, that I wanted audience to walk out of the film and think, oh, those boys were really good friends and they were supportive in the way they knew how to be that.
The first half of the movie is concerned with a young bullied boy who is new to the group of friends. The second half of the movie is concerned with his best friends within this group, who has those dreams that then become true. How did you decide to make that very unusual switch from one main character to another main character?
For me, Balli's story, the one who is bullied, was the most interesting story before he meets the boys. And then when he meets the boys, he kind of gets what he was hoping for. He gets friends and is big, starts to belong in a group. And then Atti's story, who is kind of starting to realize that he has to leave this group, becomes more interesting. So for me, it was just a natural way of, like, you know, that story becomes more interesting than I follow that.
And we have some amazing young actors in this movie, especially since it's a movie with such harsh subjects. Could you explain how you found the actors? How did you do the casting process?
Yeah, we don't have professional actors this age in Iceland, so we kind of have the casting start like a year before. And then we take a long time to teach them acting, kind of slowly build them up as actors. And then in the end, they're ready for the roles.
And how did you develop those violent scenes? And there are also scenes of sexual abuse. How did you approach those?
I mean, the violent scenes, we coordinate with a stunt actor and we train the boys, and it's very choreographed. So every punch and every move is highly trained and choreographed, so we can shoot it in these long takes. And we want to make him feel as realistic as possible, so not every punch is good. And, you know, it should be a little bit like a, you know, boys that don't really know how to fight as well. So, so there are different layers of how to make it look realistic. But with the sexual part, then we had this intimacy coach come in and work with the actors. And I thought that was great, because that it's a great method to deal with those kind of scenes and approach them. And it's very good for the actors, and it's also good for the directors and the film crew that, that we have a certain system that prevents anyone feeling uncomfortable doing those scenes.
And was the story and the characters, was this always very fixed, or did you also develop those characters according to the actors that you had found since they were non-professional?
No, I mean, the story was quite fixed, the script was quite fixed, but the actors always bring something to the characters, and, you know, but I really... Because I spend so much time on the script, then I kind of search for actors that can fit within the script. Yeah.
And how did you do the supernatural elements? Was there some artistic inspiration, some art inspiration behind it? Because I was very fascinated by those dark themes that sometimes look like paintings.
Yeah. I mean, that was developed a lot with my cinematographer, Sturla Brand Grövlen, and he influenced a lot kind of that approach. And we looked at different paintings and. So, but I would kind of give the credit a lot to Sturla for that approach.
And would you personally classify this movie more as a movie for adults or for children? Because I saw it more as a movie for elderly children that are not, like, maybe not little children, but younger children. But then here in Germany, I think it's only possible to be screened from 16 years of age.
Yeah. I think that's a shame, because for me, like, it's a film that 13 and 14-year-old kids should watch.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah.
And in Iceland, that was like, I think 14 was the limit in Iceland, but then, you know, like 13 will be accepted. So, yeah. So for me, that's the audience I want to see the film the most. And yeah, but of course, I'm happy that everyone comes to see it, but I would prefer youth audience to be able to see it as well. Yeah,
I also would strongly recommend this film for people who are maybe 12 years old, 13 years old. I think it would be perfectly fine to watch that movie. And you said that those themes of social violence, of youth violence, are based on your own experience, but did you also research it? Because it's some time ago that you were young,
and
youth culture changes very quickly.
Yeah, we researched it because I was honestly not sure how much of that behavior was still going on in Iceland, because now I live in a bubble of my peers and children, and they're not behaving like this, and their friends are not behaving like this. So I thought maybe this is just gone, maybe this is part of the past. But then we started researching, and we had a period in Iceland where youth violence went down a lot. But then around 2014, it started rising a bit again. It's not on the same level as it used to be, but it's still there, and we still have very serious cases. And I can imagine in Germany and every country you have that, because, kids, you know, the behavior of young teenagers will reflect on our society.
And how did you find the locations? They're very run down, dirty, dark, especially given the progress that was made in the last years in Iceland and the rebuilding. How did you find such rundown locations?
Yeah, that's funny because, I mean, the film is originally written for the suburbs of Iceland that was kind of being built at that time, and everything was quite raw. And the only raw part we found in Iceland now was in the west side. That's a little bit more expensive area. But they still have a lot of worn down houses. but these are all, this is kind of part of the old Reykjavik. But it is actually not, for us, it's like a, you know, every neighborhood in Iceland can have working class, lower class, and upper class kind of mixed within the neighborhood.
So that then also means that those kids meet in school.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did you experience the specific dynamic between the classes? Because this is still something that really intrigues me, how it would work together with people from so different classes. Because we don't have that in Germany. We don't have it at all. And for me, that was one of the most exciting things about the movie.
For me, it's in school, kids don't have so much classes. You know, it's more something that's at home with the parents. And I remember in school, it didn't matter if, you would have a guy who would act out and beat other kids, and he was from a rich family, but his parents were never home, you know, or something. There is, some reason for behavior of kids. You can have that behavior in every class. Yeah.
That's actually a very interesting point that you bring up here, that the violence in the movie happens to come from upper-class kids, while usually it's portrayed in movies, especially and also in books, to come from lower class. Usually lower class is the aggressor, and in upper class everything is fine. And this movie shows us that it's not necessarily that way. And while it might not have been meant as a metaphor, I kind of always see it as a metaphor for the violence of upper class to the lower class in society. Is there something of that in the plot?
No, I didn't really think about it that much. But I'm happy that you noticed that Conny was in lower class, because I think a lot of people watch this film and think, oh, all the boys are lower class because of the behavior. But for me, there's only one kid there that's from that lower class, and that's Palli. The other are working class and then upper. So I was happy. I'm happy to hear that you saw that.
I actually think that it's part of the reflection of social prejudice, that people see somebody who's violent and then automatically assume this person must come from the underclass, because only the underclass is violent, and even then choose to ignore their social background. And how did you find the adult actors for the film? Because they also play a very important role, especially the stepfather, who's an incredibly menacing presence. We see so little of him, but he's still super scary.
Yeah. I mean, that's Ólafur Darri Ólafsson, one of our biggest actors in Iceland. And all the adult actors are professional actors. So then they go through more like a normal casting, you know, Or I offer them the role after meeting them and discussing the role. Yeah, so that's a little more kind of simplistic way of working with them.
And there's also the subject of substance abuse or substance tryout. It's not always abuse. You can also just try them out.
Yeah.
And how did you do those with the young actors? Because did they have drug experience, or did you have to explain them what it is?
We had to explain them how to behave, you know, in that situation, because they had no experience. But just so it's clear, we really put a lot of effort in putting up rules with them and explaining the harm, the harmless effect of this. And we had, for example, a rule, if we would find out they were smoking or drinking, you know, during this process, year process, we would fire them from the film right away. You know, and if we would find out they would be in a fight in school, we would fire them as well. So they would actually have to be on the best behavior.
Play those very broken characters, they had to be on their very best behavior.
Yeah, they had to be on the best behavior. And the parents were also involved in that. It actually ended up being a... For the boys, I think it ended up being a really good experience and kind of more like a... Built like a experience. If you train and put a lot of effort into something, something very good will come out of it. And I think all of them are kind of stronger after this experience. But with the alcohol, it was funny with this one scene when they're taking drugs, just to explain to them how to act that. It's just, you know, simplify your movements, smile a little more, you know, and then, it was more approached in an acting way, but not really explaining anything of that substance, you know. It's more just, how do you move, you know, how do you walk, how do you, you know. lose your balance. Yeah.
In the movie, a big element is a transformative capability of friendship. Friendship actually transforms all of those characters in a positive way, and in a certain way saves them. How do you relate to that subject, and how do you think can it work in the real world?
I mean, I think for boys, at least, this age, friendship is extremely important. And I don't know, like, maybe I'm being, you know, maybe I'm wrong about that, but it is my kind of understanding from most females that I talk to that they have a different kind of friendship during the teenage years than boys. In the boys, it becomes like a group dynamic, and you have to be, there's a lot about the loyalty. You cannot backtalk each other. You cannot, like, it's a lot about like a loyalty kind of, like, one for all in a boy group. When with girls, it seems to be more like 2 and 2 or 3 and 3, like it's more divided a little bit. And I just remember my old friends, even though we all then went our separate ways, we still have a connection from those years where we would do anything for each other. You know, there would, if something would happen, you would have to sacrifice yourself for your friend. And it was just, it's like a very much like a loyalty thing.
Yeah. But your movie also shows that this kind of loyalty can have a dark side if you're pulled into some violent action or some dangerous action that you don't necessarily
want to be. Definitely. And that film is kind of, you know, and that is part of it, that the friends can pull you up and push you down, you know, and friendship can pull you up and push you down all the time.
Would you like to explain a little bit more about the subject of toxic masculinity in this friendship? Because I think it's very interesting that this movie doesn't idealize it. It also doesn't condemn it. It more tries to have a realistic approach showing the ups and downs, the appealing sides about this masculinity culture, but also those repulsive sides.
Yeah, I mean, my kind of aim writing and doing the film is not to judge the characters, you know, and the toxic masculinity, and we had a lot of questions around that in the script, like, should they say that or should we say this? And my answer was always like, we have to be real to who they are, and they're saying stuff they don't really know what, you know, for them it's just funny, you know, and for someone else it might be hurtful, but in that context it's, you know, it's just the way they talk. And especially one joke in the end that I still think it's funny, by the Brits. And I think it's super funny because for me it's very realistic that they would say this, and we talked a lot about it, is it allowed and are we making fun of that, but it's like, no, we're just allowing them to be how they are. And I think that reflects the toxic masculinity is something we are slowly growing out of,
hopefully.
I think so. I think if you compare generations, then it becomes very clear, you know, that we're growing out of it. It's different if you compare like year to year, but if I compare to what my generation had to do when we were teenagers to my father's generation and his grandfather's, it becomes really clear that we're taking huge leaps out of toxic masculinity, but we're still not there. But, you know, it is still in our society, but it's still much better than how it used to be.
Yeah, yet let's hope it doesn't go back to where it used to be.
I'm optimistic. I believe in that we're always getting, like, how I'm raising up my son, it's, you know, about emotions and hugging and all that. It's, you know, much more than how I was raised up with my father. And yeah, so, and but I'm probably doing something that he will feel like, oh, I'm not going to do this, because sometimes I feel like I need to toughen him up, you know, and I don't know if that's because I need to toughen him up or if it's because it's been imprinted in me that he has to have the ability to shut down his emotions. Because that's something I'm debating sometimes with myself, you know. Does my kid have to know how to shut down his emotions like I can do, you know? Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, that's a very fascinating aspect. Yeah. And also, what I would like to ask, this movie was so different in many aspects from your first movie.
Yeah.
And is there also something for your third movie that you're working on? Do you already have some ideas?
I just know I want to work further with a supernatural element. I would like, now it was like a side story, I would really like to explore that more closer to the main theme. But in what sense and how, what kind of a movie, I'm not sure yet.
Okay, but we would certainly hope to see it then again, not only on a movie festival. And do you think you will win the Oscar?
No.
No, stop asking that.
No, at some point in my life, I'm 95% sure that I will. No.
95%? The 95% is a very specific number.
Yeah. Like, and at some point, you know, not now, but maybe. For me, it's more about the, like, awards like the Oscars are great for visibility and to get financed and all that. And of course, it helps your ego, you know, but at the same time, it's... If I can make the films I want to make and have money, you know, to pay my house and everything like that, and have audience that want to watch my film, I'm going to be happy.
Yeah. We definitely have our fingers crossed anyway that those 59% become true. So thank you so much for that interview.
It's not 95% now, because now I'm in the Oscar race, but I would say much less percent at this moment for this film.
Okay, but still. So watch the Oscar race, but even more, go and watch Beautiful Beings. It's in cinemas now. And that was another interview from Movie Break. Thanks so much. I'm Lida, and we hear each other again, hopefully with a better connection. Bye.